The Comic Book Time Machine, Episode 9, Rocket Raccoon 4-Issue Limited Series.
Hello, time travelers. It's that time again. It's time that the Council of Time Lords gathers together to discuss comic books. I'm Daniel Butcher, but I'm not alone, because that wouldn't be a council. I'm also here with...
Matt Anderson.
And Ben Avery. And here we are. You guys ready to talk about some awesome comics?
Yes. Let's do it.
Or are you just ready to talk about some comics, Daniel?
I'm ready to talk about things that are put on printed pages.
Things that are printed on pages with pictures and
in color. A bit of a disagreement tonight on is it good, is it bad, but we're going to find out. There's going to be a debate, and I get to decide the winner.
I don't know how I feel about that whole debate thing. Just because, well, we'll get to it, I guess.
Well, because the questions are slanted to my favor.
The questions are absolutely slanted in your favor. And not one question actually addresses the real issue, which is, should you read it or not?
Yeah, that's one of our questions.
Yeah, sort of. So, right. Tell us what we're doing here, Daniel.
We're going to discuss Rocket Raccoon. Now, I've been controversial over at Welcome to Level 7 about Rocket Raccoon. But today, maybe I can be more gentle, more friendly, more loving about our friend Rocket Raccoon as we look through his past history. Specifically in his first big event, his
miniseries.
Miniseries.
4-issue miniseries from 1985. So we've just gotten back from April of 1985, where we were able to get all 4 issues of Rocket Raccoon, the miniseries. Cover date, May, June, July, and August. But on sale date, February, March, April, January, February, March, April, May. So here we are. We're going to talk about this 4-issue miniseries. It's not his first appearance, though.
No, it is not.
Have you read his first appearances?
No, I have not read either. Now, one of them, we had attempted to move the time machine back to a time where there was a big green guy.
Incredible Hulk, number 272.
But there seems to be some sort of time barrier around that incident, that date.
It's a fixed point in time, I think.
You know, I don't know about you.
Incredible Hulk number 278 or 272 is a fixed point in time.
It's like when I went back, it was just black.
Yeah, on Marvel Unlimited, the app, if you tried to read this comic, this Incredible Hulk comic, which is Rocket, his first regular Marvel Comics appearance. It doesn't work on the app on your iPad. And if you go through the web browser, I was able to read the middle of the story, but not the first couple of pages and not the last couple of pages. But it was interesting, and I do have opinions about this thing, but. Yeah, Rocket Raccoon, he's not originally what we are familiar with right now. So right now, he is a member of the Guardians of the Galaxy. And we've seen him in a movie now, which is pretty awesome that we actually have that character on the silver screen. And he's a very, very, very different character, the way he's portrayed in the comics and on the screen than he was in this first 4-issue miniseries. So, Matt... You haven't read any of this stuff, have you?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think it's kind of important just to start off with saying I'll be a little bit more quiet during this episode until we get to the judging of what you guys are saying. Because, yeah, I haven't read any of this original Rocket material. And the only time I've actually read him in comics so far is he's appeared in Brian Michael Bendis's Guardians of the Galaxy run, which is a pretty recent run. And I've also read a brief appearance that he had in Silver Surfer number 4, which just came out here in July 2014. So, yeah, pretty, I guess He also appeared in All New X-Men during the Trial of Jean Grey crossover. But all that to say, only very recent, we're talking 2012, 2013, 2014 appearances.
And really, what we're both doing is we're making a pitch to you, Matt. Ben's going to attempt to pitch to you to read it, and I'm going to pitch to you to read something else.
Yeah, and you know why he's going to pitch to you to read something else, aside from his feelings about the book? See, I pitched it to him. I said, you should read this, man. This is really good. Read this stuff.
And there I was at Disneyland. I'm not making this up. My kids are taking a nap, and I'm reading it. And my vacation excitement may have lessened as I took part in this.
Wow. So Rocket Raccoon ruined your vacation.
Ruined your Disney vacation. Ruined.
I wouldn't say ruined it. I mean, it just made it a little less magical.
And to me, it would have just made it all the more magical. So I don't know. Where should we start here then with this conversation?
Well, I think that, Ben, why don't you describe Rocket Raccoon, Guardian of the Keystone Quadrant?
Okay. So here's the deal, man.
Sit back and relax.
Okay, so the miniseries, four-issue miniseries, as Marvel was wanting to do back in the 80s especially, they always had that special font up at the top that says number one or number two or number whatever on the top there. And I always have a special feeling when I see that anyway because of a couple of the comics that I got when I was a kid. And so this is Rocket Raccoon, and that was the title of it. It was spinning out of The Incredible Hulk, his appearance in The Incredible Hulk, although there are some differences from the character in The Incredible Hulk and the world in The Incredible Hulk in here. This is very much a standalone story. He also had an appearance in a black and white Marvel magazine, a Marvel premiere or something like that, where it was the second chapter of a series that Bill Mantlo was writing, and there was never a third chapter in that series. And Rocket Raccoon, or he was Rocky then, but he appeared in that, and he was running along with the main character, and then it was funny because the caption at the end of that says, are you going to see any more adventures of this, you know, space hero? Not talking about Rocket Raccoon, but the other character. And, you know, it's up to you guys. It's up to you to if you support it by reading it and telling us how much you like it. And so apparently nobody really liked it.
But, you know, though, that's interesting because, you know, going back to Manhunter and his premiere, that's really kind of the way that first issue special number five ends is, you know, do you want more?
Yeah, well, and they had a lot of series like that. You know, they had, what is it, first issue special or something like that from DC. That's what the Manhunter was, right?
Yep, it was in first. Yeah, that was first issue special.
And they had a bunch of different things that they were just trying out, like was it Woman Cop or Police Woman or something like that? Which,
well, and even just, this series kind of ends on that note where, you know, there's this promise that perhaps if you want more Rocket, you can get more Rocket.
Yeah. Now, here's the deal with Rocket, though, with Bill Mantlo, who he created the character. It was during his run on the Hulk, which his run on the Hulk was, you know, it's one of those epic runs. You know, he just did it for a long time and did really well. And when I think of comic book Hulk, that's who I think of is that version of the Incredible Hulk, even though I really didn't have, I only maybe had one comic that was that. And really when I think of the Hulk as a kid, it was the TV show Hulk, but in that issue of the Incredible Hulk, it feels like it's Bill Mantlo trying to do Steve Gerber. If that makes any sense, where his Incredible Hulk character goes to this crazy world and it's this mixed up upside down trying to make some sort of social statement world, and it's got animals doing things that people should be doing, and robots, you know, acting like people. And there's all these weird, just one panel of the robots are making this, they're building this, and it never has any payoff at all. At least it doesn't in the pages I was actually able to read. but then
it all sound familiar.
Yeah, but then, you know, half a decade later or so, I'm not sure, I didn't look up the date for The Incredible Hulk, but he got to do this four-issue limited miniseries. And here's the other thing about this limited miniseries. For me, it feels like, you know, with Star Trek, they go to a world where it's just everything's upside down and weird. And they don't spend a lot of time there. They just spend 1 hour and then they leave. And, you know, like the gangster world, where it doesn't make any sense, but we'll go with it. The Nazi world. You know, Sliders did this too, and any kind of traveling space sci-fi show. This feels like one of those worlds after the main characters left. Like, the Enterprise could have visited this place, had their adventure, there had been this little twist and social comment, and then they leave, and now we're just finding out, you know, we're going to follow that world and see what's going on there. Because it just doesn't feel like... part of it doesn't feel like it's just its own story. Like, it's enough to have a story. I don't know. But here's... Okay, so Rocket Raccoon, Guardian of the Keystone Quadrant, is about a world called Half World. And it's called Half World because half of it is one way and half of it is another. And they have... I don't even know how to explain it. It's crazy. It's just wacky stuff. There's cybernetic clowns running around killing people. They're robot clowns. They're running around. They're assassins. You have two toy makers who are both trying to get the job of master toy maker by marrying a weasel who...
No, that's an otter.
Is it an otter?
I'm pretty sure she's an otter.
Well, anyway, she's Rocket's... she's Rocket's girlfriend, and she's also Rocket's sidekick, who is Walrus. It's Rocket's sidekick's cousin, I believe. And so I'm not sure exactly how the animal kingdom works on this world. They've been enhanced. And the background story of the world is basically... there's a race of humanoid people who decided we want to take all of our crazy people and cure them. We are going to put them on an asylum planet and put a barrier around it so they can't leave and we can't go in. And we're going to leave robots to help them.
No. They were going to heal. The shrinks were going to heal those that were mentally ill.
Yeah, but they left.
But they left because they had to go back because they were going to lose their funding.
Yes, and so but the robots were programmed to help them. The robots were logical and didn't want to do this. So the robots instead started building things and enhanced the animals. And the animals were created to keep the people, the loonies, occupied. And so the robots were creating toys for the people. And you had the toy makers who were using all of the robots' equipment to make the toys. And meanwhile, the robots are also building a giant humanoid spaceship to leave the planet. So there is also then the Half-World Bible, which is the log of the spaceship Gideon, which was the ship that belonged to the shrinks, who are now worshipped as gods by the loonies. You following all this, Matt?
Yeah. No, this totally makes sense. I'm with you.
Don't forget that Rocket and his friends have got to figure out what that Half-World Bible, what it really says.
Well, because it's written in English and they don't know how to decode the words inside. But here's the deal with the whole character here. He's based on the Beatles song, Rocket Raccoon, or Rocky Raccoon. And Rocky Raccoon went into the room only to find Gideon's Bible. Oh. See? Spaceship Gideon, the Bible.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's a lot of other things where they reference kind of the songs, and not even just those songs, but other Beatles stuff. But that's where I say this feels like it's Bill Mantlow trying to do Steve Gerber. But to me... What?
You've left out an important plot fact here.
What's that?
Rocket Raccoon is not a scoundrel. He is a protector.
Well, I was just about to get to that.
Okay.
Yeah, because Rocket in this... the story feels like it's an animal version of like a John Carter.
Absolutely.
It's that high fantasy or high sci-fi swashbuckling kind of thing. He's got the swashbuckler's gloves, you know, and there's plenty of these scenes where they're zapping and shooting, and he's got rocket skates that let him fly. Similar actually to what you saw Star-Lord with in Guardians of the Galaxy. But craziness ensues. There's a war. The toy war is going on between the two factions of people who wanted to be the toy master. Another guy, Uncle Pyro. Would that be his name? Uncle Pico? Pico. Uncle Pico. He's a turtle, and he's trying to decipher the Bible because he wants to help people, and you think he's a bad guy at first. And then there's just a lot of craziness going on. A lot of fighting. And a lot of weirdness. And some of it just feels like, you know what? We're going to start with the pun. So issue 2, or is it issue 3? issue three is simply called, no, issue two. Must be issue two. Yeah, issue two is called Mask of the Red Breath. Why is it called Mask of the Red Breath? Because it's about loonies dressing up and going to a ball. And there's the bad guys create a thing called the Red Breath that's going to kill them all. You know, and so Rocket has to save them. And so it's a little bit episodic, too. And that is also, you know, kind of that space swashbuckler feel to it. But the whole thing is they've got to rescue his girlfriend, and then they have to rescue the world. You have, well, it just, so it feels, it doesn't make sense when I'm trying to explain it, but when I'm reading it, it's fine. It's so fine. It's Mike Mignola.
Why don't you explain that Gerber connection?
Well, what do you mean the Gerber connection? As the far feel. As the feel, well, you've got the animals, and you have, you know, so there's that with Howard the Duck, but then you also have them kind of, he's using the story to make a commentary on consumerism. And on keeping the masses crazy. Like the people who want to make the toys, they don't want the loonies to be healed, because once the loonies are healed, they aren't going to buy the toys anymore. And because the toys won't be needed to keep them occupied.
They will think coherently.
Right. And you don't want that. And so then you have Rocket and his friends going around giving out the ultimate toy, which is a helmet. It looks like a space helmet. But once you put it on, it starts causing you to think clearly. And then the loonies are not going to be crazy anymore. So that's not good for business. So you've got the whole business angle of the war. And, of course, the bad guys unite and everything. it's just reading it makes sense. I promise you. Unless you're Daniel. And then you're probably like everyone else. I don't know.
So should we, Daniel, do you have any sort of rebuttal there?
Well, I can understand the feeling that perhaps that this is a Steve Gerber-like satire. But the problem is as you open up this book and you see all the animals, that's not the first thing that's going to come to mind. The first thing that's going to come to mind is, hey, look, this is something that kids will want to read. And I can easily see how when this came out originally, before we traveled back in time to grab it, that, you know, maybe parents looked at it and thought it was some sort of cute animal book and would have handed it to them, and their kids would have been completely and utterly confused as they get lost in basically the consumerism of the story. And the fact that there's a whole bunch of mental health motifs that were going to be lost on a child of 8 and 9.
But do you think a child would read this and just enjoy the fighty-fighty without the talky-talky?
But there's too much talky-talky to go with this fighty-fighty, because let's remember, this was a different time and a different place where we got more dialogue and exposition.
There are a lot of words on these pages.
And so I would say that as a story, it failed because it doesn't really fully cater on to the adult audience, because it's not obvious that it is a satire made for adults, and it's never going to fulfill the requirements of an all-ages book, because kids will never be able to enjoy it, because again, there's just too much in there. It looks from the outside like crazy images of animals fighting and clowns, crazy clowns, scary clowns doing weird stuff, but it just kind of fails to deliver. Where at the same time, something like Steve Gerber with Howard the Duck, I think the fact that Howard is actually in our world and is truly the only one like him in the world, I think it works much better because of the fact that he's in our surroundings and he is the oddball. And since he's the oddball, things stand out more. And let's be honest, most kids probably weren't going to pick up Howard the Duck.
No, but if you look at that first issue cover, it does look like something it's not on the inside. There's just this energetic kind of, this is going to be an adventure, an action adventure. And it's not an action adventure.
It's not. And so in the end, if I was to summarize my feelings about Rocket Raccoon, I would say about this miniseries, I've spent my whole life searching for sanity in a universe established to house the insane. Because that's really how I felt at the end of this, that I had lost a few cogs. And of course, I'm quoting Rocket Raccoon.
Yes, you issue are. Three. In his world there. Issue one, you've got the whole, you know, setup and everything like that, and the background to the world and everything. And then issue two, you have some of the twists and turns of characters who you think are good or bad, and they become, you know, there's twists and turns to the plot there. And then issue three opens up, and it's the Book of Revelations, and that's where everything that they knew is wrong. But the problem is, we didn't know. We didn't care at this point. But you get the whole background of the loonies and the animals getting created and everything like that. So here's my thing. As I read this, and I think to myself, this can't be the same Rocket Raccoon that we're seeing in Guardians of the Galaxy, the comic book. Because this doesn't make sense as his origin story. And that's where you have Rocket Raccoon saying, "I am a creature of dubious origin." In one of the, I think it's one of the prelude issues to the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Well, and I would agree. Right, this is a dubious origin, but that does not, in fact, mean it's not his origin, and we should not consider it canon. Now, you and I vary deeply on this. You say it's questionable. I say it's canon.
Yeah, the thing is, I haven't seen any reference to this except in another story that was like a short story that I wasn't even sure if that was meant to be canon either. And
I will argue that this year with Free Comic Book Day, Marvel has confirmed that we should treat that story as canon, since when we open up on Free Comic Book Day, Rocket Raccoon, what is the first image that we see in that book? A ship with Lord Divine.
Yeah, but is that a canon story?
Is there? I'm assuming that it is.
I thought that it was kind of tying into some of the Marvel Adventures type of thing, instead of the Marvel proper.
No, I see the Guardians. I see a story that looks very much like it could fit within Marvel 616 to me. And let's also call out the fact that the end of this miniseries, they leave the Keystone Quadrant to go out to new places and new worlds and new adventures.
But here's my question.
So we firmly established the fact that they left, and so I just assume they came to our universe.
Are you reading the Rocket Raccoon the current Rocket Raccoon series?
I am not. And since it only has two issues in the bag, I will wait until there's more issues to confirm whether or not I think that is canon, sir.
Well, because that's where he's trying to find out. There's no one like him in the universe. That's what he thinks.
But in the Rocket Raccoon Infinite comic, it shows that there is someone who appears to be like him.
I think it implied. It didn't actually show anything, did it?
No, it only implies it.
Oh, but we're not implying anymore. That character is not an implication. It is what you think it is.
Because I haven't read the current Rocket series. So you're saying in this series, we find out that it's more than an implication?
Yeah.
But also, in this series, we do see that there are multiple people or personalities of the same animal type. But also, when he talks about the fact that there, even in the movie, there's no one else like me but me, in Rocket Raccoon, the miniseries, he is the only raccoon.
He is the only raccoon that we see.
So,
you're right. But
So there's half a world that he could be on, and
so there you're
may
saying
only be three of them. I'm just saying it makes sense that he might think he's the only raccoon, since in this entire series we only see one raccoon.
Well, but okay, we also only see one walrus. But the thing is, I'm looking at that and thinking to myself, okay, he thinks he's the only one. He thinks he's the only one. Is he thinking back to the planet though? I mean, and the other thing that I'm looking at with that is he's coming from this world where there's all those other animals. I want to know, like, how does he, they don't reference that. Now they do reference that he was experimented on. That happens later in a comic I haven't read, but it's a Quasar comic where it's the Stranger who experiments on him and does all these changes and stuff to him. So he's not what he was before. But the other thing is, he says he's not a raccoon. You know, don't call me a raccoon. I'm not a raccoon. Or am I misreading that?
he says it many times, but maybe he feels as if he's not a raccoon because of the numerous things that have been done to him, going back to Half-World. And let's be honest, everyone else calls him a raccoon because he's a raccoon.
I get the impression he's an alien that looks like a Earth raccoon, not that he is actually a raccoon.
And I think that that's the impression that the comics want to give you, and the movie definitely wants to give you that impression.
But have we not seen aliens call him raccoon?
Yeah, but the thing is, that's what I'm saying, is that's the impression that these stories want to give us if he comes from a world where he actually is a raccoon from that world. Because everything, I mean, he says he's a raccoon. And, you know, he talks about other people being rabbits and stuff like that. And so that's, it just is a matter of, you know, how are they trying to make this jive? And they're just basically ignoring it. And I think that that's maybe the wise decision here, is to say it could be, it could not be. We're just going to play it off as, you know, haha, look at that. Read it if you like it, but if you don't worry about it.
But I will say to you, my illustrious time-traveling companion, that also means we should not just throw this story out.
I agree. I think it's a great story. That's the thing. I think it has value because it's a good story. It's, yeah, it sounds convoluted when I try and talk about it, but so does...
Because,
you know,
it is.
Well, yes, okay, so it is convoluted. But for me, the journey of the story was a fun journey. There wasn't as much swashbuckling as I thought there was going to be. And I was put off at first by the rhyming. The narration was rhyming along with the clown. And the clown robots are programmed to rhyme, I guess. But the narration was going along with it. And I was just, oh man, is this whole thing going to be like fake Dr. Seuss? And I've seen bad fake Dr. Seuss in comics before. And I was not really looking forward to that. But I guess unlike you, Daniel, for me, I started reading it and I was like, oh, I don't know about this. And then as I went along, I warmed up to it and was really enjoying myself by the time I got, you know, into the second and third issue.
And I would say that I went into this full of excitement because I had read much of Abnett's Guardians of the Galaxy run. And so I was super stoked because I love that version of Rocket, and I learned fast. This is not that Rocket.
No, it's not. But here's the other thing. It's not also not the Rocket from that Black and White magazine. Even though Bill Mantlo said in some back matter behind in issue one of the miniseries that it was the same one in that Marvel premiere, one of the Marvel premiere has a British accent. And how do I know that? Because he says things like, bully for you, old chap, and stuff like that. He is meant to be an English, you know, proper English accent raccoon. And boy, oh boy, I do not know. It's not the same.
And so I would argue. Okay, go ahead, sir. Go ahead, sir.
No, I was just going to say, you know, that also takes place in the future. So it's possible that he takes up the accent. But I don't know.
And I would like to throw this out there. So could this be an acceptable origin for Rocket Raccoon in the MCU? And I will argue, yes, you could MCU Rocket this way, because in this miniseries, Rocket Raccoon is established that all the animals are experimented on and the animals have received cybernetic enhancements and intelligence enhancements to act more human. Therefore, we already have the beginning of this origin in the MCU.
I agree. I think that they would do some things to make it a little more streamlined. A lot more streamlined.
So we've seen some stories today that Gunn has said that in Guardians of the Galaxy 2 that Peter Quill's father will not be the same father that we've seen in the comics. I think very easily we could not do that with this. We could have this be the Rocket Raccoon origin in the MCU.
I'd like to ask a question. Is it possible that this Rocket that you're reading, maybe even this Rocky Raccoon, is it possible this is not the same character and that perhaps we're reading about a different talking raccoon, and maybe that raccoon is in the future, and maybe that raccoon is a descendant of our crazy murdering Rocket Raccoon?
It could be. I could see that. Because that's the thing, is the miniseries is completely disconnected from the Marvel Universe, other than The Incredible Hulk, where he goes to that to Half-World.
Here, sir. Here, exactly. The Hulk has been to Half-World.
Yeah. No, I mean, he's definitely been there. And it was different, though. The only humans in Half-World when the Hulk visited were the Keystone cops of the Keystone Quadrant. They were the only humans, and they were just crazy cops running around with, you know, the whatever that you know, Keystone cop hat and billy clubs and stuff like that. And they had the great big car like you would see in the silent movies, where all the cops are all piled on, as many people as they can possibly squeeze on there. And those were the only humans in the Incredible Hulk version of it. The robots were still building their humanoid spaceship. And the animals were still making toys and using all of the things that the robots were building for them. And the whole idea of robots have to build, they can't help it, was still there. And the we have to use their technology and we have to use what they give us, we can't help it, was there. But there were some slight differences that were fleshed out when Bill Mantlo just sat down to do this specific Rocket Raccoon story. So, you know, it could be an alternate universe. It could be a similar universe. And we could be... I don't know. I mean, I think it was wise to keep things vague in this situation. A lot of times I would say, hey, if it's canon, stick with it. Why not? It's there. That's what you do. But in this case, you could skirt it and stick, you know, and not... It's not even a retcon necessarily, because you're just kind of vaguely referencing things.
You know, this hasn't been a big... issue with Rocket. What I'm about to say here, this hasn't been a big issue because Rocket hasn't been widely known until recently, but now that he's becoming a popular character, people are going to want more and more to know his origins and what's his real story. I think it'd be better if they leave that story untold. I think learning Wolverine's background story, his origin story, and other characters like Gambit, I think that ruined the characters. I think they should leave Rocket mysterious.
Maybe.
But I will say this. Marvel, in our day and age, wants to sell books, so they've reprinted these.
Multiple times.
Yeah. They've most recently, both in April 2013 and August 2011.
But I have a volume from, what was it, 2000 – where's that date there? 2008? Yeah. I have it's a book called Annihilation Classic, and I love this book. It's a hardcover, but you can get it in softcover, and it has, I was originally going to buy all the hardcovers for Annihilation, and Annihilation, the sequel to Annihilation, and I ended up only getting this one. But this one has the origin of, well, it has this miniseries, has a Warlock story, it has a Quasar story, a Star-Lord story, a Nova story, the Groot story, Bug from Micronauts. He had a one-shot, and they print that one from the 90s. And so it's just all this kind of history of space characters from the Marvel Universe. And so that's why I picked it up in the first place. I was not a fan of Rocket Raccoon. I didn't care or know much about him other than seeing ads for it in the back of my comic books in the 80s. And thinking, that's a cool cover, that issue one cover. And so that's why I was pleasantly surprised when I was reading through this. It's like, oh, here this is. Oh, I don't know. And then, oh, I like this. So it's a really a nice volume. But they're printing. They're printing his story. Makes me wonder what people think. I saw the movie, and now I want to. Oh, this is not like the movie.
So, I think it's time
for
judgment.
It's judgment time. All right, here we go. So the three questions at hand are these. Should this be read? Number two, would this be good in the Marvel Cinematic Universe? And number three, should this be considered canon? So let me start with the first one here. Should this be read? Now, Ben made some great points. He said...
And pointed out that it's completely incoherent.
It's not completely incoherent. My description of it might have been...
No. Let me take it here. I think you said some good things. You said it's sort of it's got other creatures like Rocket. You know, I like aliens that look like animals. I like Howard the Duck. I like Rocket. So other creatures, that sounds good. You said it's an animal version of John Carter, and again, I like John Carter. This is a good sell. But you also said it's episodic, and I tend to like stories that are more serialized. Maybe a big story arc.
It's episodic, but that's because as they're going through their mission, they have to accomplish these goals. Okay. So it is serialized. It is a 4-issue miniseries that is one story.
Okay. Well, that corrects that. And then the thing that you said the most that really stuck out to me is that you said it's similar to not just Star Trek but also Sliders. Now I wanted to jump in earlier, but I'm just a huge, huge fan of Sliders, a TV show from the 90s, and so. Really good points by Ben. Now,
sorry, I have to stop you there. The Sliders thing. Yeah. I was referencing Sliders as if this was one world that they could have visited and then left behind.
Still, it just brought a smile to my face.
Okay.
I think he was trying to cook the judge on that one.
I was not. I promise you that.
On the other hand, Daniel says that the story was not what it looked like. You know, maybe is it aimed at kids? No, it's not. There's some themes there that they just won't understand. You also said, Daniel, that it's just flat out too insane to be understandable. Another great point. I mean, do I really want to spend my time, wading through a story that's just hard to understand and convoluted? And am I just wasting my time? There's so many good things out there to read. Should I do this? Man, I mean, it's a really tough call, but when I weigh all the options, and the fact that Ben brought up Sliders, I think I'm going to have to go with yes. This should be read.
I am aghast. I am surprised. I am pleased, pleasantly surprised.
But why? A second reason I think it should be read actually ties into the third question at hand. Should this be considered canon? I don't feel like it sounds like where we would think Rocket's story starts, but it is. We have to just say it is canon because Marvel has put this out, and it's a Rocket story. Unless someday they use what I said, which is that this is a different raccoon who goes by Rocket or Rocky, and maybe it's in the future or maybe it's a descendant. But until that day, we have to say that, yes, this is canon. So, and finally, would this be good in the Marvel Cinematic Universe? I'm going to have to say no. It would not be good in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Too crazy. I think that Marvel has done a good job with their movies at simplifying some of the big stories that we comic fans like. I'm fine with the cinematic universe having, complete offshoots from what we're used to. So I wouldn't want to see this on the big screen, but otherwise, I'm fine with the fact that it exists. So
I win because you're okay with it existing? Is that what we're saying?
I guess that's where we're landing. Yes.
Take your win, sir. Take your
win. Wow. Hardly a landslide victory here, but mere existence, Ben, you win.
So I'm interested in hearing a little bit about this this new series because I mean I know I want to hear some story details from you guys, but I don't know if you guys heard this, but it was the best selling comic in all of July 2014, and July 14 up until, depending on when you're listening to this in history, up until now, as we're recording here in August 2014, July 2014 was the best-selling comic month in history. They sold over the comic industry made $53+ million, and Rocket Raccoon was the top comic in that top month.
Anybody? Want my real opinion?
Yeah.
It shouldn't have been.
So this is where kind of the setup. So give it to me. How is this new series by Scotty Young?
It's not bad. It's a fluke. I mean, it's tied into the movie. And honestly, though, I don't know really if usually that's the situation with a movie comic. Like a comic, like Captain America comics, I don't think they set the world on fire during the months before Winter Soldier or during Winter Soldier and its run in theaters. I know Scotty Young is a big part of it, though. People like him, and
that may be the thing, the combination of somebody like Scotty Young and the movie at the same time, because Ben and I both read Guardians of the Galaxy Prelude, And it's obviously that's a tie into the movie, but in neither case, it's not like those were flying off the shelves.
Yeah. So the Rocket Raccoon series, the problem for me is that it looks like, because it's Scotty Young, and this is kind of going into what Daniel was saying, but it looks like a kid's book. And it's not. It is not a kid's book. It is most definitely, I mean, there's just a lot of references to, you know, different things, different lifestyle choices that Rocket has and stuff like that, to where it's a decent story. I enjoyed the read, but I was really surprised to find out that it was the best selling book of the month. But I think you can't hand it to Scotty Young. A lot of the success can be put on his it's because of him.
Yeah, he's got a strong fan base. Daniel, can you kind of set up the story? What's happening in this comic?
No, I have no idea. I haven't read it.
Oh, okay. Ben, can you set up the story?
Well, Rocket has a bounty, and they come after him. And I don't remember that much about it.
Did you say that this might be, or maybe I misunderstood you, did you say this might not be in the current continuity?
Or is it?
I think it is. Something else. I'm pretty sure it is. I was talking about the Free Comic Book Day.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Thing.
So I'm pretty sure that it is that and Star Lord. There's also the Star Lord comic that.
Yeah, that was also in the top 10 in July.
Yeah, and it's not bad either. They just, you know, I'm reading them and I'm thinking it's solid, but I'm not like, oh, this is my favorite. I'll be reading this over and over again. And like I said, I've even forgotten what happens in the Rocket Raccoon one. So I just remember there's a princess and something. I don't even remember though what it was, but I do remember then that other animal that's kind of watching and kind of following. So,
guys, can I make a confession?
Sure.
Can I?
Yeah, we're okay with that.
All right. So I read this 15 months ago, and then I read it again today.
Read what?
Rocket Raccoon.
Oh.
And now that I've read Howard the Duck, it really wasn't as bad as I remembered it.
Wait, do you think Howard the Duck was worse?
No, I think that now that I've read Howard the Duck and I understand that sort of satire, mm-hmm. that it was a lot easier for me to read Rocket the second time because I was picking up on it. It was easier for me to pick up on it because I was more used to reading that sort of satire. Now, I still don't think it's an all-ages comic and by any means, but I do think that it is a little bit better written than just wacky, crazy, insane.
Yeah, no, the zany is part of the parody.
It's part of the satire. So all that mental health stuff, it's taken to the nth degree. And the first time I read it, it was like, this is just insane, and I like insane stuff. Now I'm getting the fact that, you know, he's picking on consumerism. He's picking, you know, it's not a trade war, it's a toy war. You can even talk about, you can even see him mocking religion and just institutions in general in a satire here. So, but it's lot more sophisticated than I gave it credit for.
Okay. So I'm feeling some vindication here, even though I'm sure our listeners are like, Ben, I didn't understand a word you were saying when you were trying to explain this thing.
You actually did a pretty decent job.
I don't know, man.
Can I just throw in one final recommend, though?
Yeah.
And this is another thing that Daniel read and hated at my recommendation. But Rocket Raccoon and Groot Steal the Galaxy. It's a novel by Dan Abnett. I loved it. Loved it. And no. I really, really, really enjoyed it because it felt like a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy book.
And I would say on it, you know, go out and borrow it from the library.
I really enjoyed it a lot.
But I would not purchase it. I would borrow it from a library or from a friend.
I did purchase it, and it is, I'm not sure, you know, I'm moving my office into the basement, and when I do, I'm not sure if it's going to end up on the shelf with my comics or if it's going to end up on the shelf with my Hitchhiker's Guide and Red Dwarf novels, but we'll see. We will see.
All right. So we need to talk about something else related to Rocket.
Yes, we do. we are going to talk about a little bit about his creator right now. His creator being Bill Mantlow, and who was the artist who helped create him? Says, okay, Wikipedia says Bill Mantlow and Keith Giffen.
Yep.
In that Incredible Hulk 271. May 1982. Cover date. So, Daniel, give us a setup. What's going on with Bill Mantlow?
So, and I don't remember the exact year off the top of my head, but I believe in the 1980s he was involved in a traffic accident.
I think it was 92.
Okay, 92. He was involved in a traffic accident that left him with some brain damage. So he has to have ongoing care in a care facility just because he's not able to care for himself because of the damage that's been left. I did a horrible job explaining that.
I think we understand.
Yeah, you did a better job than I did explaining the plot line. But he's in a hospital. He's still hospitalized, but he's well known for his Marvel Comics work, especially. I'll be honest, I did not know really. I wasn't paying any attention to creators growing up, and so by the time he had this accident, I didn't know who he was until, you know, years later. And then I find out, oh, he's the guy who did the first couple of issues of Transformers. Okay. He's the guy. He wrote a couple issues of Battlestar Galactica. He wrote Micronauts and ROM. And, some of these books that I had been reading as a kid or had found as a kid and enjoyed before I knew who he was. And then after finding out who he is, I have even bigger appreciation for him. I have to say, it probably came from discovering Micronauts and ROM as an older reader, as an adult, and reading through them and saying, "Oh, I want to find out more about him," and then finding out, "Oh my goodness, you know, he's had this accident, and he had this accident, you know, a decade ago," kind of thing. And the other thing is, he did so many things. Cloak and Dagger, he was a big part of Cloak and Dagger. Again, that's another one that I would read Cloak and Dagger comics because I like the characters. No idea that that was him, you know? And so I feel bad, you know, I didn't know who he was until after this accident. But a lot of the comics that I'll be covering in my solo episodes were touched by him or created by him. ROM, he did the entire run. Micronauts, he did the entire run. I'll be reading a couple issues from Battlestar Galactica, like I said, and he did a John Carter annual. He did Man from It. Well, I'm going to stick. He did a lot of stuff that I'm going to be covering. And I have to say, it's not like I look fondly back on my childhood and he touched me as a child, that a lot of comic creators and comic fans are able to have and able to say. I wish I could, honestly. But he touched me as an adult with his stories. He did a couple Howard the Ducks, and he just... So I feel bad, but I also, you know, can say, yeah, his writing did touch me, and I did enjoy and do enjoy his writing and will be enjoying it more. So Greg Pak, who was working on... He did a whole bunch of things with Incredible Hulk, and he says that a lot of his Incredible Hulk run is inspired by Bill Mantlow's run on The Incredible Hulk. And he has a blog where he wrote an article about how people can donate to Bill Mantlow's care and, you know, help out with his healthcare costs. And so he... we'll have the link in the show notes, but basically just go to gregpak.com. It's right up there on top. You can see it. It's right there in that top bar. And so Greg Pak with no C, Greg P-A-C or P-A-K.com. You can find it there.
And the great thing about this notice you'll see on Greg Pak's site is you can go ahead and donate through various forms and have it, you know, be a somewhat mechanical transaction. But for someone like Ben, who's going to be spending a lot of time here in the next few years working through much of Mantlo's material, there's an address where a card of letter or letter can be sent along with a donation. So at a certain point, Ben will be able to express his appreciation
yes.
of some of this work yes. if he so desires to do so.
And
or he could tell him it's a bunch of hoey.
Yeah, I could. Well, I mean, we've just kind of picked apart some of his work, although I'm going to be talking about some of his work in just a moment, too. But the thing is, you know, I don't usually reach out to creators like that because I just feel weird doing it. But at the same time, though, he's really appreciating this stuff. So if you've enjoyed Bill Mantlo's material, he is aware. You know, you can send him these notes. He knows them. He got to watch Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah. Disney and Marvel set up a private screening for him in his room to be able to watch Guardians of the Galaxy so he could see his rocket on the big screen. And one of the big things about this story is a lot of times people look at Disney and Marvel and say that, you know, it's a big, uncaring corporation. And I know that Matt and I have read parts of the unofficial history of Marvel Universe. And there are a lot of things that you could say that Marvel did wrong to creators. But in this case with Bill Mantlo, Marvel and Disney are trying everything they can do to make things right, including helping to give to his care costs.
Good stuff.
You wanted to, you could too. So, but they recognize it, and this is where it gets kind of sticky. There's a lot of creators who just get the bum end of the stick. But this is one situation where, yeah, the corporation is trying to make good. And I appreciate that. As a freelancer, you know, I recognize these are some pretty serious problems you can have. You know, when you're freelancing, if you're not correctly insured, you're one step away from ruin, to be quite honest. And that's the risk you're kind of taking. So, unfortunately. But...
No.
Okay.
So it's a good story and it's good stuff.
So I guess I win.
Yeah, I decided a few hours ago I was going to let you win no matter what.
Oh, well, thanks. I appreciate that.
But I was still going to make you think I was going to torment you.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out why you put me through that then, but...
Pure love. Well, that got weird fast.
Yeah. Let's
talk about some other.
Yeah, let's move on.
Let's transition.
Some other things that are weird.
let's talk about the crossover. So, how was crossover reading for you guys this month?
Weird, man. It got weird. It got really weird.
So weird. It got weird.
Mine was. I mean, you know, as you know, I've been talking about Crisis, so it's weird, but in a multiversal way. So you want me to dive in?
Yeah, sure. Because I thought Rocket Raccoon explanation was bad. I'm not sure what I'm looking at with some of the stuff that I have here in front of me.
I do not envy you.
So go ahead, Matt. Just let us know. What do we got going on with your Crisis on Infinite Earths?
Yeah, so just as a reminder to the fans, every group episode we're going to be talking about some big event or crossover that we're covering. And so for me, I'm going to be talking about Crisis on Infinite Earths issue number 3. So I had to actually take the time machine back to March of 1985. Now, the cover date does say June of 1985, but don't be fooled. It actually went on sale March 7th, 1985. And the nice thing, guys, you know, when I went back to get this, only 75 cents off the spinner rack. So not a bad deal.
Yeah. I mean, we're getting – that's what I love about this is that we get the deal, man.
Yeah, oh, hey, big time.
3 years later, I had to pay $1.75.
I know. So,
but I got 64 pages.
Yeah, I only got 32 for my page count. But so the story inside here in this third chapter in the Crisis on Infinite Earths, it's called Oblivion Upon Us. So things are about to get real. So at the opening at the opening of this issue, we find one of the protagonists of the story thus far, Monitor. He's testing this young Alexander Luther, as a reminder, back from, you know, he's from Earth 3. Interestingly, though, he's rapidly aging. So when they first found him not too long ago, he was a baby, but he's already growing up into his older childhood. Monitor, you know, he's so Alexander Luther is no longer a baby, so he's able to communicate with Monitor, and Monitor tells him that he is special because there is both positive and negative matter existing inside of him. And Monitor at this point is thinking this is something that should be an impossibility, but here it is existing inside Alexander Luther. So, you know, as a first-time reader, I'm just left here wondering, how did this happen? Did somebody make Alexander Luther like this, or is he just special and meant for a special task? So hopefully I'll find that out as I continue to read. But later in the issue, Flash mentions the burning red skies. And so the reason this stuck out to me is nowadays, you know, when in the DC universe, red skies means some sort of multiversal crisis event. And I'm pretty sure this is the first time it's flat out been mentioned in DC history.
I've heard that, yeah.
Yeah, that these red skies are known as a sign of a crisis. So that's pretty cool. This issue also features the Teen Titans, and they're teaming up with the Outsiders. This is all happening in the present-day Earth 1. But there's also some other things happening across time, because, you know, what's happening, this crisis event isn't just multiversal, but it's across time. So we've got Sergeant Rock and the Losers. That team is fighting against the Nazis in World War II. And the Monitor's recruits are also trying to protect some machines that are there during this World War II time. So Monitor has set these machines all across time and space, in the sense of parallel universes, in an attempt to stop this antimatter wave that's washing across all of these multiple universes. We also get a taste of some Old West action. And then they flash forward to the future, to the 30th century. So we're all over time in this issue. But then the final scene, oh man, this is bad news. The final scene of this issue shows that Lila, who's also known as Harbinger, is finally turning on the Monitor. And I'm guessing, I'm not positive, but I'm guessing that in the next issue, we're going to see the death of the Monitor, possibly, or just something horribly wrong will happen. It seems like things are about to go pretty wrong for the good guys.
Well, I think, isn't the whole idea of this series that things are just about to be horribly wrong? Like, it's the destruction, you know, of the universe, right?
A little bit of a spoiler there, Ben, but yes, I guess, you know, the reason this is such an interesting story is because in the end, I think it's safe to say the good guys are not going to win. This is like you're saying, this is about, you know, behind the scenes, DC wanted to destroy the multiverse because they felt like it was too convoluted. They wanted to bring everything into, you know, all together under one umbrella, under one universe. And so, yeah, I mean, you're right. Ultimately, the person that's trying to stop this from happening is going to lose. And so I'm not anticipating good things for the Monitor.
So it's...
You guys... Yeah, so any questions?
There's just a lot of bummer stuff that goes on in that series. I haven't read it, but I do know... There's some bummer stuff. Like I have read some of it, but some of the covers.
But I feel like as bummed out as Matt is, he's probably gotten the award for best issue, is my feeling, this month.
I don't know about that. Okay, I do. You're right.
Oh, yeah. Man. I mean, so, you know, in some ways, you know, I don't really know what was happening a lot in the DC universe back in 1985. I've read maybe some things here and there, so I don't feel really attached to the characters. So I know what you're saying, Ben, that there are going to be some bad things that happen to characters. But when certain characters die, I don't think it's going to resonate with me too much emotionally, because I'm not really attached to this version, this pre-crisis version of these characters. So, go ahead.
I was going to ask you a question, though. Do you feel like this story is doing a service to a reader who's not familiar with these characters? Do you feel like, okay, I'm following not just the story, but are there any characters that you're glomming onto? Are there any characters where you're saying, I like where this is going, I want to know what's going to happen to this person? Or do you feel like you're just being given, like, here's these guys, fans of the Western guys, you know, here's World War II guys, here's these guys, and it's just kind of everything's getting thrown at you, and you're just experiencing it, but not necessarily engaging with it?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I think it would be a little bit of what you're just saying, where we're seeing these glimpses of these characters, but it doesn't give me a chance to get attached to them. In fact, I mean, nowadays, if there was ever sort of any sort of crisis event, it's going to definitely include Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, maybe Green Lantern. I mean, just, you know, the core members of the Justice League are all going to be front and center. But in this story, they're not front and center. They may be making an appearance, but you might have noticed I didn't mention any of them in that review, except for Flash. The characters that were really spotlighting in Crisis on Infinite Earths are Monitor, who, like I mentioned, is pretty much a protagonist, his assistant, Harbinger, who it looks like is turning on him, the kid, Alex Luthor, and then a Pariah, who is a character who only appeared in the first issue of this series, and he's, for some reason that we don't yet know, flashing from universe to universe right before it's destroyed. And so if you look at that list of characters, I mean, also there's a mysterious villain. These are all characters created for this story. None of them existed beforehand. And so, I mean, those are the ones I care about. So, I mean, people like Sergeant Rock, people like the Outsiders and the Teen Titans, they're just there. They're basically just extras in someone else's story.
Yeah, but that can work.
Yeah.
So do you feel like it is working?
It actually probably... It's working in the sense of I don't have to know everything that was happening to these other characters. There's some references here and there that kind of go over my head, but it's working in the sense of these characters aren't just new to me. They were new to everybody at that time. And so, yes, that's working. There's a part of me that misses the superheroes that we know and love, but I can get past that.
Okay.
Who wants to go next?
Daniel.
Ooh, can I summarize Secret Wars 2, number 3?
Not yet.
Sorry. So, Silver Surfer, annual number 1, which is part 3 of the Evolutionary War. Now, funny thing, boys, a lot of these things I just have in a box, and I don't have to use the time machine to pick it up. But this is the second of two annuals that I did not have, and I had to go back to April 26, 1988 to pick it up for $1.75. But you want to hear a sad tale?
I do.
Apparently the glue, because it's got a square square spine, didn't hold up and travel. Because when I began to read it, the cover actually came off in my hand.
That's funky, man.
Yeah, that
it
is.
It was very, very funky because it's not stapled. It's glued on because of that square corner.
Yeah.
So I'm going to try to go fast on these. Basically, like the others, it's broken up into multiple stories.
So how's that war going for you, by the way?
I would like the High Evolutionary to maybe give us a mission statement for his war at this point, because I'm kind of questioning it. I'd like, I don't know, some connective material. Maybe something where we could actually stand up against him because we know what he's fully doing, other than him just randomly showing up in everybody's story. So
maybe that's his war.
Well, and so here's
I'm going to ruin your story.
So here's the thing. So this is how I can go really, really fast on this. So the first story, Adam, is written by Steve Englehart, who wrote issues 1 through 32 of Silver Surfer. Okay? So it's basically a Silver Surfer story in which the High Evolutionary asks the Eternals, who are Greek god-like super beings, to go out and grab the Silver Surfer, who is coming back from space after making out with a Herald of Galactus named Nova. To grab him and clone him, because they – not clone him. They want to map him. The High Evolutionary wants to map his DNA. And on his way back to Earth, he stops in the Van Allen belt, and he awakens the Super Skrull, who's supposed to be dead. And then they fight. And then the Eternals come, and they kidnap both of them, and then they attempt to map their DNA, which causes both the Silver Surfer and the Super Skrull pain. And so they work together, and they do a whole bunch of fighty, fighty, fighty. And then at the end, the Silver Surfer basically says, hey, guys, maybe instead of just kidnapping me, you should figure out what the High Evolutionary wants.
And that's the end?
And then you fade out.
That's perfect, though. It's he's saying what everyone else is saying. Find out what he wants, man.
Oh, and please, there you go. You've just improved the story for me because he said what I'm saying. What does he want?
Yeah.
Because, again, the High Evolutionary, not really in the story.
We're three stories in, though. Stories and deep, and you don't know what the thing is.
And he's probably been on less than 10 pages of the main story.
That's crazy.
And then the second story, and this is where it just gets it gets crazy. So the second story is Moth to the Flame, which was written by Englehart. And it's about Nova finding Galactus in a spaceship, and she thinks it's weird that he's in a spaceship. Well, he's there because he's dying because he ate someone called the Elders, and they're still alive in his stomach.
Oh, no. That is awesome, though.
So he wants Nova to go get the Surfer and Reed Richards, and especially Sue Richards. He really, really needs Sue Richards. And so Nova comes and finds the Silver Surfer, and the Silver Surfer apparently knows that the High Evolutionary's got a war going on because he's like, I really can't leave Earth right now. And she's like, but it's Galactus. It's Galactus. Come on. He's like, well, I guess it's Galactus. And so he leaves, and it says, hey, go to issue 15 to find out what happens next.
Oh, my gosh.
But wait, it gets better. It's better. The next story is Mantis by Steve Englehart. And at this time, Mantis is dead. And she's really, really confused and just kind of walking around, and she's hearing voices. And it says, and if you want to know what's going to go on next, go see West Coast Avengers 37.
Wow. Man, did you feel like you got cheated this month?
Oh, it gets even better.
Wasn't Englehart? Well, okay, keep going.
So the next thing is there are pinups by artist Ron Lim. And Lim wrote tons, didn't write, he drew tons of issues of Silver Surfer between number 15, again, going back, Moth of the Flame, go see issue 15. But from 15 to 92, he did a vast majority of the issues. And they're just random pinups. You know, you got a two-page of Galactus, you got a Nova, you got Mantis, you got Silver Surfer, his original girlfriend. Just random pinups. Okay, ready, guys?
Ready.
This is 64 pages long. Okay? 10 pages of pinups.
Wow. That sounds about right.
I thought that they were cheating in Punisher when they gave us three pages that really should have been from the Marvel Handbook. No, we get 10 pages out of 64. It's just random pinups.
That doesn't seem right to me. Ben, you think that's how many they usually put in there?
No, I'm just saying pinups are not it's an annual, you know? Yeah. And so the pinups, they're kind of cool. The only problem is they're double-sided usually, and so you're actually only getting 5 pinups that you can actually pin somewhere. But
well, and again, that Galactus one is on 2 pages. And you're going to have to cut
So it's 11 pages of pinups, or is it just 10 pages of pinups?
It's 10
but
pages,
9,
that,
9 pinups.
It's not like that Galactus one. You could really cut it out and have it fit well.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, wow. And then we get the Mark Grunwald story, which is about Wyndham, the men, the mine, and the mountain.
This is the High Evolutionary Origin stuff now?
Yep, it's his history stuff. And basically, Wyndham and his partner at the bottom of Wundagor Mountain find a huge uranium load, and they become fabulously rich. And they begin to build their citadel of science, which can fly. And then the partner's daughter sees a boogeyman, and the boogeyman is a mass figure, and he admits that he's the one who brought Wyndham the DNA mapper plans. And now he brings him subhumans, which we saw back in the first issue of this crazy thing in the X-Factor annual. But he brings him subhumans to serve as his basically slave labor to build his citadel of science. And that's it.
Yeah.
So still not that much warring going on. But
at least there's some fighty. But I don't feel as if, like, we look at, like, the recent Infinity. It's not like the entire world is on edge.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So you read this when you were young.
No, I did not.
I thought you said you had read this before.
No, this is one of the ones that I hadn't. It wasn't – I didn't read every Silver Surfer episode that showed up on the spinner rack.
Yeah.
It's also possible it didn't show up. Now, from here on out, every other part from part 4 to 11 I read as a kid.
Okay. I kind of want to ask, are you happy with this choice so far?
I'm a little disappointed. Again, I've read 3 parts. 2 out of the 3 I didn't read as a kid. And the one part that I've read that I did, that Punisher annual, High Evolutionary is not even in it.
And there's more like that, but
because I read, they're coming. The Spider-Man ones and the Fantastic Four and that I had for my collection when I was a kid. But
so where next? Part four, New Mutants Annual Four. No guarantee of High Evolutionary making an appearance.
I'm beginning to wonder. It's just going to be teasers for getting you into other issues.
See, the thing is I remember that I thought a lot of the ones that I read from a kid were really cool because of the High Evolutionary's minions, armor, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And again, the Silver Surfer episode, you didn't really even get that. You got some of that in X Factor. You got some of that in Punisher. Silver Surfer, you didn't get any of his minions. His, you know, I don't think he calls them purifiers, but his guys. And I always thought the armor was super cool. No armor, though, in this episode.
Well, your High Evolutionary is doing a really poor job of waging war, but my Beyonder, he's doing awesome, man. In my war, Secret Wars 2, issue number 3 of 9, the cover promises us that the Beyonder conquers the world. And you want to know how many pages there's superheroes in this one? I think now, it's like three or four pages have superheroes on them. And one of those pages is because he's in a room with pictures of superheroes on the wall. Oh, this story, I can't decide if it's genius or dumb. Like with Rocket Raccoon, I really enjoy it. And I just know I do. But with this one, I could not figure out if I'm actually enjoying this or not. Because the whole thing is just him. First of all, he meets a cop, and the cop goes after him and gets angry at him. He meets a prostitute. The prostitute gets angry at him and tells him, you know, hey, you should go and find a room and take me with you. But then she runs away because he starts doing his powers and stuff like that. But, you know, the Beyonder in Secret Wars 2, he just wants to experience and understand desire. He wants to understand desire. That's something that we're going to keep coming back to, that he wants to understand desire. I'll stop saying that for a little while now, but he comes across a gangster. This gangster is like, hey, man, that prostitute down there, she said that you made this gold come out of nowhere. And he's like, yeah, I did. And then they say, well, tell us about yourself, kid. I got a feeling there's some story here. And so in the next 1, 2, 3 pages, we get flashbacks to the entire story of Secret Wars and Secret Wars 2 up until now. And the gangsters are like, ooh, wow, dude, we've got to just keep him here in this room, keep him company. And so he has another, I can't tell if it's the same prostitute or another one. But
I think it's the same one.
Keep him in the room. And so she's like, okay, come here, honey. And then they start taking him out, and they are showing him the life, man. They are getting him clothes that Michael Jackson would be proud of. And eventually he gets a haircut that Michael Jackson would be proud of too. But he's also creating gold for this gangster. And there's a scene, there's no page number here, but this is just insanity. Next morning, the gangster guy has him shake down some people by using his powers. Later, he has him purify the girls of any nasty viruses, germs, or whatever. You have so much as a cold, he'll fix you right up. So these girls are walking by him, and he's touching their heads and healing them of any kind of viruses or nasty germs they might have. So basically, he's cleansing the prostitutes. He makes gold for him. He fixes the gangster's son's dyslexia, and then the gangster says, oh, while you're here, Frank, there's just one other thing. Can you and Beyonder's like, yeah, sure, and makes the gangster's wife thin. Just, you know, oh. Gives her so like this one page. It's just like, oh my goodness, this is a comic book, you know, you could buy off the spinner rack. They come to a point where they've just accumulated so much for the gangster that the gangster calls him in and says, hey, you've gotten so far. A man has to know who he is and what his limits are. And you've reached my limit. I'm letting you go, kid. I'm letting you go. Go off on your own. Find yourself. I've taught you all I can, and you've given me all I need. And so the Beyonder, he goes. He gets women. He has a boat. He ends up getting lazy and fat. But then the women, they say, oh, we love it. We love your little tummy. And he's like, I don't think you really do. So he makes himself back into the Steve Rogers body, but he still has the Michael Jackson hair. He goes and confronts the Kingpin, causes all the Kingpin's men to just follow him. So he's basically, he's now the crime lord of the city.
Kingpin.
What?
In Kingpin.
Yeah, well, and then he does Kingpin and takes over Kingpin, and Kingpin says, I will serve you. And then he's like, wow, this is great. He goes into Washington, D.C., and everyone just lines up for him. And he says, if I can control this nation, why not the world? And they have this image of him, like his grinning face over the globe as he's holding the globe with his hands. He's like, yes, this is not enough. I'm going to control all the bacteria. No, I'm going to go down to the molecular level. And then you have this cutaway scene with Molecule Man, who, by the way, Molecule Man is a very important character throughout this whole thing. Or will be anyway. He's there at the beginning. He's here in the middle. He's going to be at the end. He sees that his girlfriend is under power of someone else. And so he's like, oh, I'm going to stop that. And so he and his girlfriend are the only people in the entire world who are not bowing down to the Beyonder. There's an image of him and Dr. Octopus, the Thing, Thor, Hercules, Wolverine, Claw, the guy with the sound guy with the cone on his hand, Iron Man, they're all bowing themselves. They're all bowing down to the Beyonder, but he just doesn't understand. So he goes back to the gangster. And he's like, I don't understand. Why is this? Why do I still not, you know, why am I not content? And the gangster's like, I don't know. I wish I could help you or whatever. But so he goes to the prostitute who had expressed love to him earlier. And he sets her free and says, oh, thank you so much. Thank you. I appreciate it. I love you and all that stuff. And he's like, oh, I'm going to set everyone free now because this isn't the way to do it. You know, and so he goes to find the Avengers. And this is where it's just so absurd. He's talking to Jarvis and Jarvis is like, oh, the Avengers are out in the Skrull galaxy right now. So he disappears. And then there's a panel of Jarvis, you know, reacting to that. And then the next panel, he comes back on a city street. And is like, well, that went bad, or that was horrible, disastrous. Oh well. And then it says, if you want to find out what happened to him, that's so horrible. Avengers number 260. So, this Secret Wars 2 was written by Jim Shooter, art by Al Mingram, and then the inker is Steve Lealoha. And so we move to Avengers. We find out what happened to Beyonder and Avengers. Well, the Avengers are all trying to stop and capture Nebula, which is kind of cool. A little tie into the Guardians of the Galaxy there. This is written by Roger Stern with John Buscema doing the breakdowns, Tom Palmer finishing the art. And then it's just this whole thing. I have no idea what I'm reading. It's this war where they're trying to capture Nebula. No Beyonder. War. I wish I knew what was going on. Why do they want Nebula? Why are they mad at her? Fighting, space fighting, Hercules in space, Black Knight in space, Captain America giving orders. Oh, page 13, halfway through, we get a shadow of the Beyonder talking to Fire Lord? Yeah, Fire Lord, sorry. And then more fighting, more war. They finally confront Nebula, and the Beyonder appears and just totally is like, oh, you want to get rid of Nebula? In that case, I'll help you out. And he makes Nebula disappear. And then everyone's like, you jerk, you idiot. I can't believe you did that. We didn't want that to happen. We wanted to capture her, make her pay. You made a mess. You were trying to help, but you made a mess. And Beyonder's like, oh, I didn't realize there's so many people. I don't know what's going on. It's clear I must experience more before I can totally understand what's going on. And he leaves. So that's a story of the Avengers, but he also is in the Hulk and in Daredevil. Daredevil, he gives Daredevil sight. And so we have a whole issue of Daredevil figuring out, what do I do with my eyes? And in the end, he's like, I value my eyes too much. Give me back my blindness because I want to have my one thing that I value to be justice. And it's just basically like, I can't understand the story. Because it's like they said, oh, well, Beyonder's going to come, give Daredevil the one thing he would want. What would that be? His sight. But we can't have him be seeing at the end of the issue. And so we're going to have figure out some reason for Daredevil to say, well, take it back. But that's Daredevil. And then you have the Incredible Hulk, which is another weird one. Because I think, well, I'm not sure how, but this is, the Incredible Hulk is like in this weird dimension. And through most of the story, again, you know, we get to page 24 before the Beyonder shows up. And when the Beyonder finally does show up, it's just to kind of watch and then leave. But the whole story is really weird because it starts out and it's in the hospital and it's Bruce Banner getting born. And his father is drunk and he's like being abusive to the doctors and stuff. And the whole thing is just about his father's alcoholism. And he's kind of reliving life. But the way they do it is kind of cool because they have, you know, Bruce Banner as a baby, but then they have this green silhouette drawn around him of the Hulk. And so as we're following, you know, Bruce Banner's getting older and you have this green silhouette that's still there. And it's just kind of like he's experiencing and living through this. But you have these two demon type creatures who are kind of, you know, leading him through this and causing him to, you know, relive all of his father's alcoholistic violent bouts and abusiveness and all that kind of thing until we finally get to that final finale where Bruce Banner's like, trying to make sense of things, and the Beyonder stands there and tries to make sense of things with him. And it's just, this was written by Bill Mantlo, and with between the Incredible Hulk and Avengers, it just feels like these guys are like, how do I write this guy in? How do I write, tie it into what's going on in Secret Wars 2? And boy, oh boy, I have to appreciate the amount of work that they put into trying to figure out how to make all this happen for these 9 months. But I do not envy those writers who all of a sudden had to just stop their story and figure out how to, you know, insert Beyonder here. Especially since it really doesn't prove anything. It doesn't do anything. It doesn't push anything forward. He just shows up and then leaves, and there's no lasting consequences. At least not that I'm seeing. Maybe there will be in the future here, but so that's Secret Wars 2, number 3. Month 3. It was I took the time machine back to July of 85. Cover date for these were September 85 and October 85. Spent a whopping $2.70 on these for 100 pages of story.
So that's a pretty good deal.
That's a great deal.
I do want to call out something here.
Call it out.
Transformers are in the Marvel 616.
Yes, they are. Well, Transformers number 3 has a Spider-Man show up in his black costume. Yes, and then you have this character named Circuit Breaker, who has the whole situation with Beyonder.
I think I have that comic.
Yeah, Transformers number 9 is the tie-in here, but Circuit Breaker shows up. Beyonder is talking to Circuit Breaker, and because everyone's bowing, but one of the mighty who pay him homage gives him pause, and he says, "How interesting. You are a hybrid, a synthesis of human and machine. I am fascinated. You see, I like gadgets. Tell me about yourself." "I am called Circuit Breaker, sir. I worship you. I am yours. Enough of that. I sense you are an extraordinary human driven by extraordinary desires." Remember, he wants to understand desire. He wants to know desire because he doesn't know desire, and he wants to. "I was crippled by a robot. Without the circuitized exoskeleton, I would be helpless. With it, however, I have the power to move and, better yet, avenge myself. I hate robots." So anyway, yeah, she's from the Transformers.
But yeah, I think Matt won.
Oh, Matt absolutely won. I still can't figure out. I like and appreciate Secret Wars 2. But boy, oh boy, I feel bad for them. And some of these are bad. I can't hide it. I wish I could just rah-rah cheer it on the whole way through, but boy, I'm like you, Daniel. I'm starting to wonder, maybe I shouldn't have chosen this one. But I only have 9 months of it.
Yeah,
or nine chapters, rather.
Oh, so, Ben, if you have 9, how many, Daniel, do you have?
13, 14 by the time I'm done.
Are you doing the special one at the very end?
Yep.
Okay. I'm excited about that one.
So,
at least you have that to end on, man, because I'm excited. That's fun.
Well, guys, you got anything else to say?
I think we're done, man.
I think we're done. I just looked. Crisis is 12 chapters, so, yeah, we'll be at this for a while.
Well.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm going to do next. I want to think of something fun. Something fun. Although my solo episodes are fun. So.
No more fun.
All right. Well, I think that... Are we wrapping things up here then?
I think it's time. Good luck, kids.
Wait. No, we have one email. We have an email. We have a feedback.
Wait, and we have to plug what we're doing on our solo episodes quickly.
That's true. Why don't you start, Matt?
Okay. Here's what I'm doing. In November 2014, the Spider-Man event that I've been waiting for my whole life is starting. It's called Spider-Verse, and it's going to feature every Spider-Man from every multiverse that's ever appeared. In preparation for that, I am reading comics that set up that story. So maybe a character that I know will appear in Spider-Verse, but I've never read their first appearance. I'm going back and reading that. In the next episode that's going to be released. No, this is the most recent one, right, Ben? How is this releasing going?
Oh, it's all this timey-wimey stuff. Yeah, so I think, actually, that it was the episode previous to this one.
Okay, yeah. So check out episode 7 that was released a couple weeks – looks like last week. Ben and I talked about the character Ben Reilly. Who's Ben Reilly, you ask? Well, he's a clone of Spider-Man. If you've heard of the 90s clone saga – this guy, Ben Reilly, was featured strongly. He became the Scarlet Spider and eventually took on the mantle of Spider-Man himself. So we're going to dissect this character, Ben Reilly, or we did dissect Ben Reilly. And so that was a fun episode. And coming up next, I think I'm going to be talking about the edge of Spider-Verse. That's what they're calling kind of the prelude. So things are already kind of being set into motion. We saw a Superior Spider-Man issue come out that really kicked off the Spider-Verse event. We've seen some things in the recent Amazing Spider-Man number 4. So, yeah, I'll be continuing to cover Spider-Verse as we ramp up for November 2014.
Yeah, and I'm reading through Star Wars by using the I'm also reading the other sci-fi Marvel books of that month. And so that is what I'm doing. And I'm really enjoying John Carter. I'm really enjoying the crazy, funky Jack Kirby stuff that he did for 2001. Man, I'm enjoying that. So, yeah, but that's what I'm reading through right now, and that's my solo episodes. Although I'm planning a couple other solo episodes that are not going to be doing that same exact series there. So I got some plans.
And for the moment, I'm still doing some Manhunter moments.
So, I'm having a hard time logging in, so maybe it'll be next time.
I think email for next time.
But
it was really nice.
Send us in your feedback. We love seeing what you're writing on Facebook. We like getting all of the emails that have just been pouring in, apparently. And so,
well, it keeps switching out the thing. I'm trying to log into the one. But then it changes it to the other.
Hey, Daniel, why don't you give him the email address?
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know it either.
I don't know it either.
It's feedback@comicbooktimemachine.com.
Yeah, hey, Matt, it's feedback@comicbooktimemachine.com.
Perfect.
Yeah, so we do have some thank yous to give, though. And that is to Iron Man's Broken Antenna and to Professor Allen, because they left feedback on iTunes.
Oh,
and in the form of reviews. And we really appreciate that. It's just we appreciate just the kind words. And, oh, good, the email came up. We appreciate the kind words. We appreciate it does help us get our podcast out there. And so, okay, Professor Allen sent an email about Comic Book Time Machine number 1, episode 1. He says, Ben, Matt, Daniel, I appreciate the first episode. I look forward to many more. I enjoyed the first episode. I look forward to many more. I like the
think you know the show, the hosts, and your tastes. I agree that Fables, Rising Stars, and Sandman were terrific stories, but no one mentioned Watchmen. Interesting. And of course, Ben talked about Nightman and the Ultraverse. Can he go 72 hours without mentioning the Nightman and Ultraverse? You didn't ask specifically for your listeners' lists of their favorite series of all time, but that was probably just an oversight on your part. My list would have to include John Sable Freelance, Warlord, the 1970s and 80s version of the Legion, and Doom 2099. Keep up the good work, take care, and God bless. Professor Allen, Relatively Geeky Podcast Network host, Quarterbin Podcast co-host, Shortbox Showcase co-host. I said that wrong, but he's basically go to Relatively Geeky. blogspot.com, I think that's the website, and you'll find his podcast that he does with his daughter. So
yeah, well, so he mentions Watchmen there. I have read it. I think you guys have all read it. It's definitely good, and it was definitely revolutionary for its time, but when I look at my favorite of all time, it just didn't rank in my top five.
Yeah. And yeah, as far as the Ultraverse, I'll be talking about it more in the future.
No,
that's all I can say. Beyond that, listeners, we are going to be talking about Batman next time. And I actually thought we were going to be talking about Batman tonight. But you have time to send in your favorite Batman stories. And it doesn't have to, you know, just what when I say, hey, tell me about a good Batman story that you like, you know, what would you tell me? And you'd send it to feedback at comicbooktimemachine.com. And we'll read them on the air.
All right, everybody, let's tell them where they can find us. Daniel.
BetweenDisney.com, WelcomeToLevel7.com.
Matt.
And I'm Matt. You can find me at TheSciFiChristian.com.
And for me, you can find me at StrangersAndAliens.com, WelcomeToLevel7.com, or BenAvery.com. And also ComicBookTimeMachine.com.
That's right. And watch for reviews coming to the website.
Yes.
Of comics that we all like.
So,
or at least Matt.
All that said, do we have any final words?
I think, Daniel, do you have the final words for tonight?
I think maybe you do.
Good luck, kids. Make good choices.